In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Last week we talked about the seventh commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery. And this week I'd like to talk about divorce, which we touched on a little bit last week, but it's a closely related topic. But one thing I want to say to preface my comments, that when I talk about divorce, the purpose is not so that the people who have gone through a divorce are made to feel more guilty than they already do, but it's in hopes that those who have not been divorced will never get divorced, because they'll be given the guidance and the wisdom to avoid that. Unfortunately, when a relationship between a husband and a wife reaches a certain point in their divorce, particularly after one of them is remarried, it's kind of like an egg has been scrambled and it's impossible to unscramble that egg. And so there's nothing that can be done about that other than to pray and to ask for God's forgiveness and to move on with your life. But for those of you that either have not been married or are married but you've not been divorced, you need to pay close attention, because the most important relationship that you will enter into in this life is with your spouse, and you want to do everything you can to make sure that that relationship is lived out in accordance with the gospel. Christ connected divorce and adultery right after he talked about committing adultery in the heart, which we talked about last week in the Sermon on the Mount. He went on to talk about divorce. In Matthew chapter 5, beginning with verse 31, he says, "It hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say unto you that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced committeth adultery." The law that Christ is referencing here is found in Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 1. It says, "When a man hath taken a wife and married her, and it come to pass that she find no favor in his eyes because he hath found something shameful in her, then let him write her a bill of divorcement and give it into her hand and send her out of his house." Christ talked about this aspect of divorce later on in the Gospels. Just a few days prior to his entry into Jerusalem, the Pharisees were seeking to trap him, because they had heard what he had said about divorce previously, and they were hoping that they could either catch him contradicting himself or that they could catch him speaking against the law of Moses. In Matthew chapter 19, beginning with verse 3, it says, "The Pharisees also came unto him, tempting him, and saying unto him, Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? And he answered and said unto them, Have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, For this cause shall a man leave father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. Wherefore they are no more two, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man separate." They say unto him, "Why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement and to put her away?" He saith unto them, "Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, suffered you to put away your wives." In other words, suffered means allowed in Old English. "He allowed you to put away your wives. But from the beginning it was not so. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except be it for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery, and whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery." So Christ restates what he said in the Sermon on the Mount, but he explains why what he's saying is not contradicting what Moses had said. What you have to understand is that there was a debate among the rabbis at this time, and there were two schools of thought. The liberal school of Rabbi Hillel, who took the view that you could divorce your wife for any reason. These rabbis said that if your wife burnt dinner, that you could decide that was grounds for divorce. One rabbi even said if you simply found another woman more attractive than your wife, that would be grounds for divorce. Whereas the school of Shammai said, no, it's only for the cause of fornication. And when you look at what Moses actually said, that's clearly what he was saying. Because in the Hebrew, when he says, because he hath found something shameful in her, it's clearly talking about some sort of sexual immorality. Either he found that she wasn't a virgin before they got married, or he found that she had committed adultery by some other means. And also, Christ points out that it wasn't as if Moses was even commanding under these circumstances that the husband had to divorce his wife. He simply allowed them to do so because of their hardness of heart. the hardness of heart on the wife who would have committed some sort of immorality that caused her husband to want a divorce, and also the hardness of heart on the part of the husband who would refuse to forgive his wife. Also, Christ talks about what God intended in the beginning. And what the fathers point out is if God had intended in the beginning for Adam and Eve to be able to divorce, God would have provided them with alternative spouses that they could have then married after they got a divorce. But when God created Adam and then made Eve, there was only one man and only one woman. And so there was no one else for them to choose from. We sometimes hear people say, if you were the last man on earth, I would not have anything to do with you. Well, Adam was not the last man on earth, but he was the first man. At that time, he was the only man. And so Eve really didn't have a whole lot of choice in the matter, and neither did Adam. They were the only two choices that were there, and so they stuck together. One thing I should also say is that when we enter into marriage, we are like a new Adam and a new Eve. And so when you make the choice to marry another person, you need to think of your spouse as the only other person that's in the world when it comes to the question of marriage and your intimate relationship that you have in that context. There's only one other person. You need not think about who you might have married or who you've met since you got married that might have made a better spouse. You need not compare your spouse with other people, because when it comes to that relationship, they're the only other person in the world. St. Paul gives one other reason for divorce other than fornication. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, beginning with verse 10, he says, "And unto the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord." So when he says, "yet not I, but the Lord," he's saying this comes straight from Christ. "Let not the wife depart from her husband, but, and if she depart, let her remain unmarried to be reconciled to her husband, and let not the husband put away his wife. But to the rest speak I, not the Lord." In other words, he's saying, I don't have a clear commandment from the Lord, but I'm just telling you based on my wisdom reading the Scriptures and what I believe the Holy Spirit's guiding me to say. "If any brother hath a wife that believeth not, and she be pleased to dwell with him, let him not put her away. And the woman which hath a husband that believeth not, and if he be pleased to dwell with her, let her not leave him. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Else were your children unclean, but now are they holy. But if the unbelieving depart, let him depart. A brother or a sister is not under bondage in such cases. But God hath called us to peace. For what knowest thou, O wife, whether thou shalt save thy husband, or how knowest thou, O man, whether thou shalt save thy wife?" One thing the fathers point out about this is that St. Paul is not saying if you intend to marry an unbeliever, then this is the situation that you need to be thinking about. He's talking about people who were unbelievers before they got married and then embraced the Christian faith. And so now they have a husband or a wife that's not a believer. And what he's saying is if they're okay with staying in the marriage, then you should stay in the marriage. But if they depart, if they leave you, then you're not bound by that any further. And so all of the reasons that for divorce that the church allows are basically extrapolations from these two reasons, the reasons of fornication and also the reason of abandonment. And I don't want to go into detail about that. I would just say that if you feel like you have a situation that would possibly meet one of these criteria, you could talk to me about it. But talk to me about it before the situation's beyond the point of no repair. Because the first thing that we need to try to do is to not allow that relationship to get to that point. There are several reasons why people get divorced. I would say the number one reason is many people go into marriage with unrealistic expectations. And this is partly the fault of Hollywood and romance novels, because they portray romantic love in a certain way. And you notice that the movies, the romance stories always end after with a marriage, but then it doesn't go on after that. And the reason why those stories usually don't go on after that is because then there's a lot of really difficult and mundane things that you have to go through together. You raise children, you go to work every day, and that's not the kind of stuff that makes for a very interesting Hollywood movie. But that's the reality. That's what happens when you get married. That's life in this world. We talk about falling in love, and some people talk about falling out of love. And this is really nonsense. What they're referring to is sort of an attraction or maybe an infatuation that you may feel to someone of the opposite sex. But what you have to understand is that if you have a real relationship that goes into marriage and it's healthy, it's not going to have that warm, bubbly feeling that you had on your first date. Because that's really, in many ways, a very superficial feeling. And that's not love. And that's very important for you to understand. What is love? Love, first and foremost, is a choice. You choose to love someone. And they choose to love you. And you don't fall out of that. You can choose to stop loving someone, or they could choose to stop loving you. But that's a decision that you make. It's not as if you got hit by a truck or you fell off of a wagon. This is a choice that you make. But the thing is, if you make the choice to love your wife and you go through all those mundane and not so entertaining aspects of life that you go through in marriage, and you endure all the difficulties of raising children, there is a deeper feeling that you will start to have for your spouse, a deeper bond that makes all that stuff that happened when you were in high school and you were dating seem like nothing. And it's something that can provide you a deep sense of joy and satisfaction. But even if it doesn't go in that direction, you can always choose to love your wife or your husband, even if they're not the most lovable people in the world. That's a choice that you can make. The other problem, I think, that causes more divorces than anything is that we can get overly familiar with members of the opposite sex, and then we start comparing the person who we've developed a friendship with, maybe at work or at school, with our spouse, and comparing them unfavorably, because we know our spouses, but these people are new and untried, and so we can imagine how much better it would be with that person. And the key thing there is we need to not allow ourselves to get in that kind of a situation to begin with. It's very easy to develop an attachment with someone of the opposite sex if you put yourself in a situation where that can happen. Because your emotions, your hormones, your feelings don't know that that person's not your spouse. We have natural feelings, and if you put yourself in a situation like that, certain things are going to start to kick in, and at a certain point, you will get caught up in that emotion, and you will probably have a very difficult time turning back. Scientists tell us that at a certain point, our brain, most parts of our brain, start shut down when we are getting really romantic with someone. And those are the parts of the brain where we think about consequences and things like that. And so we need to make sure we don't allow ourselves to get to that point with someone that's not our spouse. But I would say the other big problem is finances. And this is related to just our general lack of satisfaction with the things that we have, maybe even with our spouse. We always think that things could be better. But when it comes to finances, we see people on TV who are living the lifestyles of the rich and famous, and everybody in our culture wants to have all that right off the bat. There's no concept that there's a time that you go where you start off and you have very little and you gradually, throughout your life, get into a better financial situation and maybe you can afford to do a little bit more. But when you get married, if you would just simply be satisfied with what you can do at that time and not overspend, not put yourself in a situation where you're going to have financial stress, it will save your marriage a lot of misery, because when the finances start becoming a big problem, that adds stress to every other aspect of your relationship. So what can we do to avoid divorce? One thing is all that stuff that we know about what it means to be a Christian, we have to be that way with our spouses. And we tend to be nice people at work, nice people at school, and then when we come home, what do? We take out all our frustrations and angers at the people who were not nice to us on the people that we love the most, and we need to avoid that temptation and not do that. Also, when you're in a marriage, there's going to be times when you disagree, and having an argument is not a bad thing, as long as you argue in a loving Christian way. And it may not necessarily seem like it's bubbly love at that particular moment, but when I say loving, I mean there's certain things that you just don't say, even though you're in the heat of an argument about something that you care about. Because once you say something hurtful, you can't unsay it. You might apologize repeatedly after you say something very hurtful, but that person that heard that for quite some time is going to be replaying what you said, and they're going to be wondering, well, did they really mean that, and are they just saying they're sorry because they don't want to hurt my feelings? When I was a kid growing up, I don't know if kids in school still have this concept, but we had a concept of fighting fair. And if you were fighting somebody, you didn't hit below the belt, and if you knocked them down, you didn't kick them while they were down, you didn't have two guys fighting one person. And so we had a certain code that we went by. Well, when you're having an argument with your spouse, there are certain things that you ought to not do. You ought to not attack your spouse personally. You ought to not bring up things that can't be changed from the past. And you ought to not, for example, when I talk, say, not attack them personally, let's say they really are unintelligent, because we tend to want to say, that's stupid, you're an idiot, or something like that. Let's say they really are not the most smartest person in the world. Can they do anything about it? No, they can't. So even if it was true what you were saying, saying it only adds hurt. It doesn't actually help the discussion move forward. What you want to do is you want to keep the focus on the issue and talk about how this, why this issue is important to you and how you see it, and then communicate that to the other person and try to come to some resolution. And also the scriptures say, never let the sun go down on your wrath. You shouldn't allow that stuff to fester. Another thing is our expectations need to be low in terms of what we are expecting from that other person. That's not to say that other person won't do a lot of things, but in any given situation, don't expect that they're going to be doing even 50% of the work in a particular situation. You figure that you're going to do as much as you can do, and let them do what they can do. And sometimes you may feel like you're giving a lot more than the other person. And there are going to be times when they feel like they're giving a lot more than you are giving. But if you both are trying as best as you're able to give as much as you can, and not waiting for the other person to do something and not begrudging them the things that you do for them, then as time goes on, you'll both find that you pretty much are helping each other out, that you can depend on one another. When that person's weak, you'll be there for them, and when you're weak, that person will be there for you. Choose to focus on the good things about your spouse. In my secular job dealing with child support, I used to work with a lady who was very outspoken, and I could overhear her conversations with people across the hall, and I overheard her one time saying to a woman who was complaining about the guy who was not paying child support as she wanted or something, she said, well, you loved him once. And that's true. You even no matter how bad your relationship might be, at one point, you love that person. Think about why you love that person. There's obviously something good about them that made you want to marry them in the first place. And don't focus on their shortcomings, because we all have shortcomings. And hopefully their strengths will outweigh your shortcomings, and your strengths will overcome their shortcomings. Because you're one flesh, you're a team, and so they don't have to be perfect in every way, and neither do you. You can both help one another through the difficulties of life and through whatever difficulties we may have as individuals. Don't ever talk about divorce. If you never talk about divorce, if you don't sit around thinking about it as a possibility, it's a lot less likely that it will ever happen. But in the fit of an argument, if you start saying, I want a divorce, or I wish I'd never married you, these are the kinds of things that start making the other person thinking, well, gee, I guess our relationship is pretty unstable. And they start thinking about, what am I going to do if she's serious? And they start making contingency plans and thinking about what they'll have to do if all that happens. And then that kind of stuff leads to that becoming a reality. Think of your children rather than yourself. You may have a spouse that has many shortcomings, and you may have a very rocky relationship, but if you have children, your children really need to come first. Think about them and their happiness before you think about your own. And you need to keep Christ as the center of your relationship. Pray together, go to church together, because if you have Christ as the center of your relationship, he's sort of the referee that will keep you both honest and will keep you both together. So depend on him, lean on him, and he will get you through those difficult times. We can't take divorce lightly. We see the effects of the breakdown of the family in our country every day. It's an unfolding disaster. And also, marriage is under assault in many different ways. We could talk about gay marriage. We could talk about all kinds of other things that are going on in the culture. But divorce is something that we have control over ourselves, and that's something that we need to make sure that we take it seriously, even if everybody else isn't. We're not getting the help from our friends and from society that we maybe would have gotten 100 years ago. But if we will fight the good fight, if we'll try to preserve the marriage and live out the marriage, our marriages the way that God intended us to, there will be a great reward for you, not only in this life, but in the next. Amen.